My name is Russell Spatz, and I'm an alcoholic. And I am a member of the Carl Gables Group of Alcoholics Anonymous. I haven't found it necessary to have a drink, nor have I had a drink since January 25th, 1981. So I'm grateful to God for that. And I guess this is my birthday month. So if I make it to the 25th, it's looking a little dicey at this point, but this will probably help me get there. But if I make it to the 25th, I'll have 31 years, and which means, thank God, I'm just a little bit dumber than I was when I came in here, because I was real smart. I pretty much knew everything right before I got here, and as a result of being here for 31 years, I unlearned a lot of stuff. There's still a lot of stuff I have to unlearn so that I can get closer to him, and so I've become pretty stupid in Alcoholics Anonymous. You should have caught me early on when I was smart, but I must be dumb because all my sponsees tell me I don't understand. So they keep coming up to me for advice for some reason, and giving me all these complicated issues and these problems they have with their lives and their wives and their kids and their job, and they think I have the answer. And then I take the best shot with the little brains I have left and tell them what the answer is, and they tell me I don't understand. So I must not be that smart anymore, but I may not be right most of the time, but I'm pretty happy. And early on, my sponsor once asked me one of these stupid sponsor type questions: would you rather be right or would you rather be happy? And I, of course, said I wanted both, because I always wanted everything. And he told me the sad truth in Alcoholics Anonymous, and sometimes you just have to make a choice between God and the car, or God and the woman, or God and things. And sometimes you got to make difficult choices, like would you rather be right or would you rather be happy? And as an alcoholic, I always knew I was right, and I needed to be right, and you needed to see I was right and explain to everybody else I was right. And as a matter of fact, if that didn't happen, you needed to die, because it happens to be a capital penalty in the United States of America to disagree with me, you know, because you're wrong and you're stupid and you deserve to die. And that's the way you think if you're an alcoholic. That's just alcoholic thinking. I didn't know there was anything weird or strange about it. You know, it says in the big book, our alcoholic life is the only normal one. It just seemed normal to me to hate people that didn't love me or didn't agree with me. It's a normal deal. I said to my sponsor once, I said, well, that's just my personality. And he said, well, your personality is killing you. And it's a difficult thing to accept that when you're in love with your personality. When you just know you just have such a great personality, and you got to get this drinking thing under control, but as far as your personality is concerned, it's the greatest thing since chopped liver. You know what I mean? And it was my personality. What I didn't realize is drinking was not the problem. What I didn't realize is what the problem was my personality, was me. And the last thing I want to change is me, because I'm perfect. It's all those other people that have a problem. And first of all, I want to wish everybody a Happy New Year. And I want to wish Kyle, thank God you're here. This is January 1st, your first AA meeting. That's exciting. You know, I want you to come back when there's a real speaker. You know, somebody who you know, don't pay any attention to anything I say. This is not really AA. This is just my opinion. This isn't AA's opinion. It's not anybody in here. And so if I say anything that makes you mad or gets you upset or anything like that, just chalk it up to the fact that I'm not doing that well. And there's other people that have different opinions, and don't worry about it, okay? It'll all work out in the end. So I'm 62 years old, I think. You know, when you get up there, you know, I'm not sure, but I think that's it. I got 4 children. They're all grown, and 6 grandchildren. My lovely wife is here. I've been married to her for 30 years, and it's been... I'm going to share with you a little bit of my experience and my strength and my hope, and I'm going to read a couple things out of the big book. And you know, I'm a lawyer by trade, you know, so a trial attorney. So it's not unusual for me to speechify. And I once said to a judge, I said, Judge, I'll be brief. He said, Mr. Spatz, you can't say your name in 10 minutes, you know. But it is a daunting sort of thing, to try to encapsulate 62 years of life. into the pertinent areas in like 45 minutes, you know what I mean? And you always feel you're leaving out something, and you probably do, but that's not the point. The point is not that you totally understand every nuance or every detail of my life. I used to think that was, that's why I thought nobody understood me. You know, every alcoholic thinks they're so unique. They're so different, you know? You don't understand me. You know, if you came up to me and talked to me about my drinking, you know, at any one time, every once in a while I'd have somebody talk to me about my drinking, and I'd say, I could understand being where you are, seeing what you see, that you thinking I have a drinking problem. But I think if you knew the entire nuance of my life, if you knew everything about my life, every time I've tried to start off the right way and been screwed and been hurt and everything's not turned out right and how many times I've been a victim, you know, of bad breaks and misunderstandings, I think if you understood that, you'd understand that I don't have a drinking problem. I drink because I have problems. As a matter of fact, my drinking perfectly matches my problems. And pretty soon my problems are going to go away, and I'm not going to have to drink so much. So thank you for your advice, but why don't you just go screw yourself? So, you know, so the bottom line is I didn't have a lot of people having heart-to-heart talks with me about my drinking for two reasons. First of all, I didn't hang around people that didn't drink the way I did, so I thought it was perfectly normal. And if you were ever going to have a conversation with me about my drinking or how I acted or how I behaved, you better be ready to have a conversation about, you know, every bad thing I knew about you and your mother. You know what I mean? Because you could come at me, but it wasn't going to be for free. It was going to be nasty. It was going to be a bad deal, you know. And so that was the situation. But fortunately for me, and maybe fortunately for you, I met God's fish. You know, there's a story in the Bible. The story is Jonah. I didn't really know about this story. I didn't even start reading the Bible until I got into Alcoholics Anonymous. When I was about 15 years sober. And then I realized that everything in the Bible was stolen from the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. But the story about Jonah is very interesting. The story about Jonah is Jonah was chosen by God to do a certain task. And what his task was is he was supposed to be a priest to the people in Nineveh. And Nineveh was this crazy-ass place, you know, that where the people were all wild and crazy and hated God and loved to party wild and do crazy things. Basically, it was a city filled with alcoholics. And God said to Jonah, I want you to go to that city and talk to those people about me. And Jonah started thinking about this, you know what I mean? And he didn't think it was a really good idea. You know, maybe God didn't have a good idea. So instead of going to speak to the crazies, to the alkies, he decided to jump on a ship and go to like the Crystal Cathedral, you know, to hang out with the good people. And there was this huge storm. And as a result of this incredible storm, they almost died and they didn't know, the sailors didn't know what was going on. And Jonah looked at them and he says, look, this is because of me. God told me to go to Nineveh, and I didn't do what he said, and now we're all going to die because of me, because I didn't follow God's will. And the bottom line is that he said, look, you throw me overboard, you get rid of me, and you're going to be okay. And the sailors didn't want to do it, but they finally picked him up, threw him overboard, and the sea got calm. And then God, what the Bible says is God sent this fish to swallow Noah, big fish, to swallow Noah. You probably heard about this story. Noah and they swallowed Noah, and he stayed in the belly of the fish for 3 days. And he kept on crying to God, please let me out, please let me out. I'll do everything you tell me to do. And he says, okay, you go to Nineveh. And he said, okay. And the fish vomited him out, and he went over to Nineveh, and he preached about the Lord and God in Nineveh. And everybody got excited, and they started forming AA groups all over the place. It's true. You might have heard about it. You know, Jesus, he sponsored 12, you know, and it went crazy all over the world, you know. And ultimately, we got around to this place after the Oxford movement and everything like that. And everybody started praising God and getting well and turning from that stuff. And Noah being the alcoholic that he was or the crazy he was, he didn't even like that. He was pissed off. He thought they should all die, you know. But God had better ideas. So what God did for me is he sent the big fish to get me. And the big fish that got me was J&B Scotch. You know, that's what got me. That was my fish, or a quart bottle of Colt 45 malt liquor. He sent the fish, you know, and I'll tell you, I didn't even realize that what alcoholism was. You know, when you first come to AA, you don't realize what alcoholism is. You think it has something. Get this. You ready for this? People think alcoholism. You're not going to believe this. has something to do with alcohol.
Yeah.
Do you know that? I think it's because of the name of the organization, Alcoholics Anonymous. It has alcoholism all over. They think, and everybody in AA is sober. And that's what confuses people on the outside. They say, why do you still go to those meetings? I said, because I'm an alcoholic, but you don't drink. I said, no, I know, but I got to go because I got alcoholism, but you don't drink. And that's because people think, believe it or not, that this disease has something to do with alcohol when it has nothing to do with alcohol. Well, of course, it has something, a little tiny part to do with alcohol, but it's really not about alcohol. Now, of course, because of the disease, we start drinking alcohol because no woman, no amount of clothes, no car, no anything works just as well as just a few drinks. So I drink it. But the reason I drink alcohol is it's because it's the best thing that cures alcoholism. I experience alcoholism when I'm sober. It says that in the book. I didn't know that. It says men and women drink because they like the effect produced by alcohol. That's why I didn't drink alcoholless beer. You know, that's why I didn't drink iced tea. I drank alcohol because I like the effect produced by alcohol. And then it says they are restless. They are irritable. They are discontented. It doesn't matter whether they have money. It doesn't matter whether they got the sex. It doesn't matter if they have the whole thing going, whether they're in Wisconsin, California. The bottom line is if you're an alcoholic, somewhere along the line, you need a drink because it's just that bad. They are restless, irritable, and discontented unless they can again experience the sense of ease and comfort, which comes at once by taking a few drinks, drinks they see others take with impunity. And so what I have to understand is alcoholism is something that hits me when I'm... I never experienced alcoholism. I experienced something called drunk. Drunk is different than alcoholism. You can have a non-alcoholic here and an alcoholic here, have them both drink a bottle of booze, they'll look exactly the same, drunk. I never experienced alcoholism because whenever alcoholism raised its ugly head, it could have been 20 miles away and I'd see it coming. You can feel alcoholism coming. You know what it feels like? It feels like boredom. It feels like hatred. It feels like anger. It feels like depression. It feels like feeling sorry for yourself. It feels like they don't know who they're screwing with. It feels like they don't know who I am. They don't know who I'm dealing with. It feels like, why does this crap always happen to me? It feels like, I can't believe this. It feels like, I'm the king. I'm on top of the world. It's nothing but glory now. It feels like my entire life, everything I felt through my entire life. It feels like I'm in love. It feels like I'm in hate. It feels like me. It feels like my personality. And whenever I've had those feelings, it feels like I'm bored. Life is boring. That's what alcoholism feels like. It feels like every feeling and every thought, it feels like the committee. It feels like every thought, every feeling I have when I'm sober. And whenever it comes on and I see it 5 miles away, it makes me feel uncomfortable. And I turn to my buddy and I say, pull the car over, I need a drink. And I have a couple of pops of that scotch, whatever it is, and all of a sudden, the alcoholism goes away. And you know, if I drink it enough, I get addicted to it because I have to get more and more to get it, to keep on getting it to go away. And then they do things like they arrest me for driving while drunk. They don't arrest you for driving while feeling sorry for yourself. They don't arrest you for, you know, driving by being depressed. They don't arrest you for driving while hating, or driving while coveting, or being greedy, or being lustful. They don't arrest you for that. They arrest you for driving while drunk. And your life gets totally unmanageable. And you get fired for being drunk. Not for hating the boss, for being drunk. And all of a sudden you start thinking that you have a problem with, you ready for this? Alcohol. And everybody around you thinks you have a problem with alcohol. They don't realize that your real problem with is that you're breathing and you're actually living on the planet. You know, they don't understand that. I didn't drink, you know, I know there are some people that have good reasons for drinking. I drank because of my mother, my father. I drank because I was awake. Awake was good enough for me. I don't know what kind of disease you had. Awake was all I needed, okay? And I drank because I was awake. And so I'm sitting there, and I'm 18 years, and that's it. And no, and the bottom line is that, and you know, I put the plug in the jug, and I stopped drinking, and it got that bad, and I got down on my knees, and I give my life to the Lord, and I come into AA, and I put the plug in the jug, and all of a sudden, and I'm not drinking, and for a nanosecond, for a week, for a month, whatever it is, all of a sudden, it's wonderful. Because I do become addicted to the drug alcoholism, and I do become addicted to all that stuff. And all of a sudden, you know, it says in the big book, it says our alcoholism centers in our mind, not our body. Alcohol is but a symptom of the disease. It didn't tell me it has a whole lot of other symptoms. It didn't tell me hating myself and hating other people and lathering up in the shower and hearing voices like, you're an asshole, you're an idiot, you should die, you don't deserve to live, you don't deserve any. It didn't tell me that all that crap that was going on in my mind is also a symptom of this disease. It didn't tell me that criticizing and judging people and hating people was a symptom of that my disease. It didn't tell me that. All it told me is that alcohol, see, it's a hell of a symptom. It's the fish that gets us here. It's a fish that gets us to Nineveh, that gets us to the Little River Group. It's a hell of a symptom, but it's a symptom. And so I come in here, and I start feeling good, because when you stop drinking alcohol, a huge amount of problems that have to do exactly with alcohol go away. People start patting you on the back who watched you getting drunk, and they say, we're real proud of you, so you start getting praises. You look on the dresser, and all of a sudden, there's green leafy stuff called cash. And you say, where did that come from? You have like money, because alcoholism is expensive. You know, all of a sudden you're going to groups and meeting people and they like you and you feel good for like a week or a month. You know what I mean? You're on that cloud because all these problems that were removed from your life because of alcohol consumption go away. And then all of a sudden the day comes where you can't believe they're screwing with you again. And they don't know who they're dealing with, you know? And who the hell they think they are. They can't do that to me. They can't close off that parking lot. Who the hell they think they are. And all of a sudden you get mad, you get angry, and then all of a sudden you start realizing, now I know why I drank. Because of something called alcoholism. But it should really be called selfishness-ism. Self-centeredness-ism. Feeling sorry for yourself-ism. Because selfishness and self-centeredness, that's the nature of our disease, along with a whole other ideas that are unhealthy. Bill Wilson said the next frontier is an emotional sobriety. It's all about unhealthy dependencies. Because we just know that money will solve all our problems. So I'm 70. We got an idea of all these things that will solve our problems. We got a program that says job or no job, wife or no wife, money or no money. Don't let anybody say, any alcoholic say, because they're all going to say it when they come here. If I had a job, if I had my wife, if I had my house, if I had my money, that would solve my problem. Because like booze, when we got that stuff, momentarily we felt okay until the car had a flat tire. Until the wife was criticizing us. Until the toilets in the house backed up. And then it was, I can't believe this is happening to me. Then it was just a big problem. But every one of us, when we come in here, we just know that if we only had these things, or we were in Australia, or something like that, we'd be okay. Because like booze, it somehow worked for us. And what we tell people in here, they don't want to hear it, it's an old diet, it's crazy stuff. Like none of that stuff. It says nonsense. The only requirement for drinking is to trust God and clean house. It's all about your relationship with Him. You know, you have no power. God has all power. It says, we cannot manage our own lives. We cannot manage this stuff. No human power can relieve our alcoholism. Only God could and would if He was sought. Being convinced we are now at step three. And we listen to that in AA meeting, and we buy into it, and we feel good for 5 seconds. Then we walk out the door, get in our car, and start managing our lives again. What am I going to do to get this? How am I going to get the money? How am I going to get this? Not relying on Him. And then we get crazy again until we get to the next meeting where they talk about God again. And there's always five guys in the back saying, I don't want to hear about that stuff. Put the plug in the jug. It's all about alcohol. Because there's two different books that are being read in here. There's one book that people are reading, and there's a whole group reading this book. It's called How Not to Drink. And this is all about not drinking. And that's all it's about, not drinking. And you want to, some of you hang around the A, you'll start thinking that. We introduce ourselves as alcoholics. We give awards, little medallions. You haven't drank in 30 days, you haven't drank in 1 day, you haven't drank in 6 months, you haven't drank in 15. You can be a serial rapist, you can live a life of unbelievable horribleness, You can feel miserable about yourself, feel sorry all the time, not be able to have a decent relationship. But if you got 15 years without a drink, hey, come on up and get your medallion. And that's the book you read when you read that I came in on. Reading the book How Not to Drink. Not even drink if your ass falls off. It's all about the plug milk jug. And then there's another book. They talk about it around the, when you start talking about the sixth step. The separation from the men from the boys. Where they start talking about the man is the guy, the standard is he wants to grow in the likeness of his creator. They say things in here like, when you sincerely take such a position, all sorts of remarkable things happen. You know, having all power, he gives us everything we need if we stay close to him and perform his works right. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. It's the book that says, it says right here in this book, it's the book that says the great fact is this and nothing less. That means it's nothing less. That we have had deep and effective spiritual experiences which have revolutionized our whole attitude towards life, towards our fellows, and towards God's universe. The central fact of our lives today, the central fact is not the girl, it's not the woman, it's not the man, it's not whether you have a husband or a boyfriend, it's not whether you have a car, whether you have a job, or anything like that. God will supply all your needs. He says the central fact, what we think about, what we talk about, who we hang around with, because God will even show you how to create the fellowship you crave. The central fact of our lives today is the absolute certainty that our Creator has entered into our hearts and lives in a way which is indeed miraculous. He has done for us what we cannot do for ourselves. You work upon those bases. You focus on that. If that is your focus, not only are you not going to drink, not drinking is even the question. You're going to have remarkable things happen to you and great events happen to you. And that's what this book is about for some people. That's the book they're reading. They're reading about that book, how to get closer to God. It's all about God. All the stuff. They see God all over this book because he is all over this book. Every other word is about him and about developing a relationship with him. We know but a little. God will always show you more, so your real reliance has to be on him. The whole book is about him. And there's a whole group of people, usually they got about 15, 20 years, that are reading the book about God and how to get closer to him, like our 11th step says. And guess what? The people that are reading the book that is only about not drinking, and the people that are reading the book that is only about God, we meet in the same place. We hang out at the same meetings. And the people that are reading the first book, which is about not drinking, don't really want to hear about the people who are reading the second book. Those Bible thumpers, those big book thumpers, you know, those thumpers. They don't want to hear about them. And all the people that are reading the second book, all they want to talk about is him. And we all got to meet here with that tradition about unity. And of course, the people that are talking about not God, and I don't want to hear that God thing, they're a lot louder than the other people. So if you're new, you'd start thinking that this is just about not drinking. And then you might get sober and stay sober for a week or a month or 5 years or something, but you eventually drink again because it's not based, because the basis isn't solid. Because your sobriety and your life is based upon sand instead of standing on the rock. Because that's the deal. So I was 19 years old. I was 20 years old. And I don't know, it was about 1970. And it was about the year, you all know what a Camaro is. You remember the year when I don't know how many people, you know, I mean, I'm 62, so I have to remember there are people here that might not even understand what I'm talking about. It was the year that when the Chevrolet first came out with the Camaros, and the Firebird came out at the same time. They almost looked similar with the Fastback. And if you were around that time, remember, they had this sleek Fastback. They almost looked like Corvettes, but they were larger. And I knew, one of the things that alcoholics can sense, you can sense what will change your life forever. Because, you know, the biggest thing in my life was women, was girls, was Playboy. I knew a Playboy bunny would change my life. I had all the magazines around. You know, when I think about it, as an 18-year-old kid, you know, it's like, you know, you ever see a dog chase a car? Like, what's he going to do if he catches it? That would have been me with a Playboy bunny. Thank God I never caught one of them suckers, you know what I mean? I'd probably be dead now today. But, you know, the bottom line is, so I'm looking for the Playboy bunny that's gonna cure me, you know? Which is every gal that's, drunk with me at 3 o'clock in the morning, by the way. You know, but But, and you see, so now I may be telling myself I want the car, I want the job, I want the money, I want the this, but behind all that was the woman. It was always for me the woman. And I understand that because I've sponsored hundreds of guys in here, and you'd be surprised how many men die because they just can't give up the obsession about the woman. Because their whole life centers and focuses on the woman. And I have a sneaky suspicion, although I don't sponsor women, but I've heard enough in here that it ain't that much different with the women. If they're happy, they got a guy. If they're not happy, they don't have a guy. It's all about the guy. It's not about God. And the bottom line is that they came out with this car called the Camaro, and I saw one of the first Camaros that was in Miami. It was on Potemkin Chevrolet, I believe, and I think it was on Alton Road. And I had a few bucks at the bank because I had like a little trust fund or something like that, a few bucks. And you know, as an alcoholic, I couldn't wait to spend it. You know, because, you know, listen, my whole life was about, I was 9 years sober until I realized that if you spend more money than you make, you go into debt. I was a math major in college and I didn't know that. I just thought, I didn't think you could live without credit cards, without living a dishonest life. And, you know, I spent more money buying things I charged more things on credit card buying things I didn't need with money I didn't have to impress people I didn't even like than you could possibly imagine, okay? And then complained about how my life was down the tubes because I didn't have any money when I was making good money, but I was spending it all for stuff that I thought I needed because without that stuff, I'm a piece of crap. See, that's my problem. I'm a nothing. It doesn't matter that I have a JD degree. It doesn't matter that I was Department of Laws and Mathematics, a National Science Foundation Fellowship. The bottom line is no matter what I have, no matter how good I look, I'm a nothing. That's my problem. I'm a nothing. I always was a nothing. I'm always going to be a nothing. I used to drink something and put it in my system. It turned me into an almost. When you're a nothing, almost is top of the world. And I used to drink it just to become visible so that you would see me. I'd walk into the bar. You know, I didn't have that thing where it says freedom from fear of people will leave you. How could I fear people? All I did was drink at bars among people. Well, if I wasn't scared of people, why did I have to get drunk to be in a group? Why did I feel uncomfortable unless I said, give me a drink? Because I'd walk in that thing, and besides, if you're an alcoholic, you're also a please love me and don't reject me and laugh at me aholic. And your whole life is about, what do they think about me? What did I say? What should I say? Why did I say that? What are they thinking? With the absolute knowledge, the old idea, that all they're doing is thinking about you. They're talking about you when you walk out the door. They're all talking about you because you're so important and they're thinking about you. And you just know that's true. And you're just agonizing about it. You know, that's the deal if you're an alcoholic. And that's called alcoholism. And you know when that happens? That happens when you're sober. So what happens is you drink to get rid of the alcohol. People, alcoholics, drink alcohol so they don't have to experience alcoholism. We drink it. People don't like it. That's why we drink, because we can't stand sobriety. So if you're sober, you got a problem. So getting back to the car. So I'm sitting there, and I just know that if I had this car, because alcoholics just have this knowledge. We just know this. We know it's in our DNA, that if I had that car, I'd be okay. Because then everybody would look up to me. And everybody would think I was cool. And God forbid that they didn't think I was cool. That's the worst thing in the world. And everybody would think I was something instead of nothing. And maybe that blonde would look at me, or that brunette, or I'd have something. You know what I mean? And I knew it was that car because I saw a commercial. And there was a guy driving that car. He had a blonde next to him. And she was smiling at him. I saw a billboard with that car, and there was a girl there next to this guy, and he had this car. He had the keys to this car. I mean, these people spend millions of dollars on Madison Avenue, and they know exactly what to put up there to tell you that you're insufficient unless you have this deal. And there are, when you go out there, you just start looking at the billboards. And see what, you know, I don't know what it says to normal people. Maybe normal people say, that car would be nice, or that's a nice looking car. Alcoholics say, if I don't have that, I'm a nothing. Doesn't matter, I'm a nothing if I don't have that. If I don't have an iPod, I'm a nothing. You know? And then I get the iPod and I look at another billboard and he says, I'm a nothing without that car. There's always something to tell you that you're a nothing. You know? And we look at that 24/7. We get this stuff only once in a while. And half the meetings we go to are discussion meetings. And all they talk about in discussion meetings is how they don't have the iPod. Or how their mother or father is standing away between them. You want to know what this disease is about? You go to the, you're not going, if you don't realize that this disease is about stuff and being addicted to stuff, you're not going to enough discussion meetings. There's nobody there saying, oh, I have this problem. I love the Lord. I love God. I want to be closer to Him and I can't. What do I do about it? They're saying things like my mother, my father, my sister, my aunt, the thing, the job, the money, the stuff. It's all about the stuff. God forbid one guy says, well, what does that have to do with God? They say, we don't want to hear that stuff. This ain't about that. We just want to give sort of higher power lip service and do like AA light and make believe we're doing something. So I had to have this car. I knew this car was the answer. And so I went over there and it was in the showroom. It was like the car off the this wasn't like the car that's in the lot. This was the first car in Dade County, on the showroom. It was gold with a white Landau top. Now, you don't see too many cars made with Landau tops these days. You know what I mean? Believe me, they don't look good when they start rusting but underneath it. But the bottom line is, back then, Landau tops were in. There's probably some kids in here that don't even know what a Landau top is. But it was a white Landau top. It was gold. It was sleek. It was gorgeous. It would make me into a superstar. It was the answer to my life. You know what I mean? This was it. I had to have this. And I took every cent I have and I put it down in that car and I said, let me have it. And they said, we can't let you have it. Because I wanted it now. Because I'm an alcoholic. I can't wait 5 seconds. I got to pop. I'm used to changing my mood in a nanosecond. You just go whack. You know, it's okay. You know, I'm there. You know, and I wanted that car. And he says, no, we got to prep it. No, you don't have to prep it. No, we got to prep it. It's the law. We got to prep it. You can come back tomorrow morning at 10 o'clock and pick it up. And I was there at 8 o'clock in the morning waiting. I was going to get that car and change my life. And the car came down. It had about 200 or 300 miles on it. It had that new car smell. It was perfect. It was Saturday morning, 10 o'clock in the morning. There was nobody on the roads. I got in that car and I drove out of that lot and I drove away. First new car I ever had. Beautiful Camaro, one of the most beautiful cars you'd ever seen, and I drove away, and I felt, I swear to God, in my mind, and unfortunately, this is the only mind I got, this is the thing that's been getting me into trouble, you know what I mean? In my mind, I thought I was driving in Yankee Stadium, and the bleachers were filled. No, not Yankee Stadium. I thought everybody had a TV set in the entire universe, and they were tuned into one channel. And the channel was a reality channel. You know, like when you see these car chases, and there was a satellite, and it was focused on me. And it showed me in the Camaro driving. And every woman on the planet, every gorgeous woman on the planet, was looking at me driving that car, saying, if I could only have that guy. And I was driving, sure, you're laughing, you don't know what it's like. But you know, and I'm driving down the street, and I get to the first light, and I'm all of a sudden, I'm something now. Everybody's got to see me. I can't, this is unbelievable. This is like the best, you know? And all of a sudden, some guy pulls up in the new Cadillac. And he's got a blonde next to him. Good looking guy. And I look at him, and he looks at me. You know, he's probably about like my age now, you know, and I look at him and he looks at me and the thought goes across my mind, why can't I have a Cadillac? The feeling lasted 2 blocks, the payments lasted 36 months. No, that's a lie. It was like 60 months because I really couldn't afford it, you know? And you know something? One day later, it was a used car. Because as soon as you're driving, it's a used car, and I was a nothing again. You think, you know, I want to hear something? Let me tell you about that addiction. Every 6 months, every year, I told myself when I wasn't feeling good, if I had a new car. Kept me coming back and knowing I had to have a new car, I had to have a new car, I had to have a new car, I had to have a new shirt, I had a new pair of pants, a new haircut, a new something to be okay and add on because I was a nothing. You know, and I have a feeling it works the same thing with the gals. You know, I've been stuck on this billboard I'm seeing on US1 you know, one of the things that happens when you start focusing on God, focusing on what this book wants you to focus on, you start to discern. You see, when you're involved in the soup that we're all involved in, not only alcoholics but non-alcoholics, the soup of I need this, I need that in order to be okay. You know, the truth of the matter is, you know, if you're sober and you're focused on God, you're okay right now. You've got everything you need to be okay. You know, and if somebody doesn't like you unless you have this, you don't want to be their friend anyway because they're not a friend anyway. You know, and you're already okay. You know, in this group, you're okay. Right here today, we're all okay. But what I don't realize is I live in a soup of a life. It's not just alcoholics, it's all of us, that our entire economy, everything in the world, our entire culture is built on. It'll all collapse unless we buy, have, get, whatever, and the whole thing. Hey, whether you're seeing a movie, whether it's a billboard, hey, I see movies. I saw the other day, remember what's that? What was that, the Pretty Woman? Who was the gal who starred in that? Julia Roberts. I mean, I'm sure she's a nice lady. I mean, she's sweet, you know. I'm sure she's beautiful in and of herself. So what do? They take somebody like Julia Roberts, who's gorgeous in the first place. They put 15 pounds of makeup on her. They coif her hair. You know what I mean? They write a script on how to say the perfect thing. They have script writers how to say the perfect thing. And they put her in a movie, in a script, with a guy named Richard Gere, who's gorgeous, and they put makeup on him, and the perfect situation, the perfect deal, and the perfect life, and then they take 15,000 takes to make sure that the scene looks perfect, and it all turns out perfect, and the romance turns out perfect. And those are and every movie, and every television show, and everything I see and I turned on is that way. Perfect people, looking perfect, with perfect lives, being happy because it's all perfect. You know what I mean? And I walk around and it seems like the entire world is telling me I am so screwed. If I only had that deal, I'd be okay. And nobody has that deal. Julia doesn't even have that deal. That's why they're all doing drugs over there and getting divorced. They don't even have that deal. But my whole life is built around once I walk out this door, the whole world is telling me I don't have that deal. I need a drink. And I'm driving down US 1 by the collection. You gotta look at this sign. And I'm stuck on this sign. I got to tell you about it. Because when you get involved in looking at what we look at in here and dealing with the stuff we deal with in here, that will never cause you to drink. Dealing with him and what he wants you to do and service and loving people and caring about people and doing stuff like this. And you know, you can see the other world. You can see the first book. You know what I mean? And you can see the second book. You can see the first life. And you can see the second life. And it may not be obvious because we were so inundated with it, it becomes part of our life, but it becomes obvious to you. And I'm driving down the street, and there's this big billboard, and there's this beautiful woman, and she's probably in her 20s or, you know, something like that, and it doesn't show her head, it's just from the neck to here, okay, to her waist. And her breasts are like out there. I mean, they're not totally exposed, okay? But as exposed as you could be without being totally pornographic in this beautiful bathing suit. And underneath it, and it's huge. You know, it's larger than this room. And there's this big red letters. Breast augmentation. Now, I'm a man. You know what I mean? I mean, I'm an old guy, but I'm a man. So I look at that, and for 15 seconds, thank God it's only 15 seconds, I go, if I only had that, you know what I mean? I have a feeling that every guy walks by there, except the weird ones, you know, are saying, if I only had that. And I wonder what the gals are saying. I mean, they don't put the sign up there and spend thousands of dollars because it has no effect. And I suppose the gals are driving along looking at the sign and they're saying, if I only had those. Because I know I'm insufficient. Those would make my life okay. Sort of like the Camaro would make my life okay. And even the gals that already have the breast implants, they're probably saying, man, if I only had that bathing suit. That's how Bloomingdale survives. And it's all about if I had the constant search for the rest of your life, for the bathing suit, for the breasts, for the girl, for the this, for the that, and everything like that, never feeling okay, never feeling fulfilled, always feeling like you need a drink, there's something always wrong, it's never good enough, and even when good stuff comes in your life, you piss on it because you can't even appreciate it because you feel so crappy about yourself. And that's alcoholism. That's what we battle every day. And not only does the world out there not understand it, okay, the world out there wants you drunk, it wants you dead. It's fighting against everything that's going on in here. It's telling you out there that you need all this stuff, and it's telling you that God is a bunch of crap. And if you believe in God, people are going to laugh at you, and God knows alcoholics don't want to be laughed at, because if there's anything a person that feels secretly insecure and insufficient hates worse, is to be treated like he's secretly insecure and insufficient. And so we got to look cool. And you want to something, as bad as it is out there, that same thing is going on in here, in AA. Don't kid yourself. This ain't Well People's Anonymous. We got people in there that, you know, let me tell you something. Healthy stuff that's fed to you. Got, for every guy who's telling you the healthy stuff and the focus on this book, there's another guy saying, don't listen to that crap. The same guy, you want to know something? The same guys that you were sitting around with, sitting in the bars, while I was sitting in the bars getting drunk, while my wife and child was waiting for me till 3 o'clock in the morning, I don't remember one guy at that bar while I was getting drunk at 3 o'clock in the morning ever saying to me, Russell, you're 30, you know, you're 30 years old, you got a wife at home, you got a baby child at home, why don't you grow up and be a man and accept your responsibilities? What the hell are you doing at 2 o'clock in the morning sitting in this bar getting drunk? What kind of man are you? I don't remember one guy saying that. The only thing I remember those guys saying is, you're a great guy, she's a bitch, don't worry about her, let's have some fun and everything. Those are the guys I drank with. And they were all divorced or having problems with their marriage anyway. And you want to know something? You know where all those guys wind up? In here. The bars are our waiting room. That's where you hang out, waiting to get into here. That's right. They're all in here. And there are, and you know something? I used to sit there and drink booze and talk crap about other people, because that's what we do. And talk crap about my life and talk crap. And I never talk about God except to laugh at people who believe in God. And you want to something? Believe it or not, there are people in here that are doing the same thing, but they're just drinking coffee. Because they're drinking because they're reading the first book. You know, and you're going to hang out with one or the other, and you're going to get results. Your life, and I don't believe this is a dress rehearsal, I think this is pretty much, you know, your life. You know, I hate, you know, it would be a sad thing to get to the age of like 70 years old, even if you didn't drink, and say, man, I could have done this thing differently. Why was I always laughing at those guys that were the big book thumpers? Or laughing, why didn't I go to church and Bible study? Like, you know what it says in the big book? You're not going to believe this. You know what it says in the big book? It says, we lose prejudice even against organized religion. We begin to see where they're right. When you read the Dr. Bob and the Good Old Timers, what you read is that the entire thing was based upon religion. It was based upon God. All they read was the Bible for the first 4 years. Bill Wilson, it says in chapter 6 of the 12 and 12, it says, a well-loved clergyman. They hung around clergymen. Do you know in the family afterwards, they enthusiastically endorse church membership. They say they don't have to. He says, if you're really looking for God, where in our society would you go? It could really help you out a lot. You know, in other words, improving your relationship with God. As long as you don't argue with people, you're going to find people that are non-alcoholic that feel like you do. Do you know it says that in the book? It says that stuff in the book about religion. Sam Shoemaker, the head of the Oxford movement in the United States, was Bill Wilson's, you know, guide. Ed Dowling, a Jesuit priest, was his guy. You know what it says that in the book? Now, you may not realize that religion is talked about a great deal of time in the book in glowing terms. In glowing terms. You may not, and you know, whenever they talk about spirituality, they never talk about, like, I acquired the quality of spirituality. I don't have the quality of spirituality. You want to see how spiritual I am? Take me away from I'm spiritual, not religious. I'm spiritual, not religious. I'm not an alcoholic. I'm an alcoholic, but I'm spiritual now. Oh, okay, I'll tell you about it. That's like a quality I have, like brown eyes. Hey, just take me away from the meetings. Take me away from my sponsor. Take me away from the Bible, the big book, or my Bible, whatever it is, and you're going to see how spiritual I am. Let me tell you what I am. I'm selfish. I'm self-centered. I'm driven by 100 forms of fear, self-delusion. I step on the toes of others. They retaliate. I'm self-will run riot, though I usually don't think so. Above everything, let me tell you something. We must get rid of this selfishness. We must, or it kills us. God makes that possible. Now, you wouldn't know that. That's actually out of the big book. That's our program. You wouldn't know that if you were in Alcoholics Anonymous and got all your information from the fellowship, because the fellowship will tell you, you don't have to believe in God. Don't believe that bullshit. I'm spiritual, not religious. Just be spiritual. Just be wonderful. Do the next right thing. That's my problem. I can't do the next right thing without God. If I could do the next right thing, I wouldn't be in here with you guys. I'd be riding around in my Camaro with a Playboy bunny. That's my problem. Man, this is a scary... Hey, this is a serious disease. This is a serious deal. But because along the road, and I understand if you're, you know, poor Kyle back there. I'm sorry this is your first meeting. Are you okay? He's okay. He hasn't fainted. He hasn't fainted yet, you know. When I first came in here, you know, I'll have 31 years this month. You know, you ever hear people say, well, if I heard that stuff when I first came in here, I would have left. Well, hey, maybe you needed to leave. Well, I would have died. Well, maybe you would have died. You know, we're pretty much as common as dirt. We're not that, but you know, in the old days, they weren't worried about that crap. They were more worried. You know, you went up into an upper room. You couldn't even get into an A room unless you went up to the upper room and got on your knees and gave your life to God. Did you know, in front of people? And then they would allow you to go to the meetings. And even you look at Dr. Bob in the good old times and say, we often wonder what the meetings would be like today if people were required to do that in order to get in. I'll tell you, it'd be a real qualifier. I'll bet you wouldn't hear a lot of bullshit about God or people arguing about God or stuff like that. It'd be a different sort of deal, right? Well, you know something? You know, I'll tell you, all I can tell you is this. I came in here an atheist or agnostic, and I'm sure they were saying this stuff. I know they were saying this stuff. My sponsor was saying this stuff when I first came in, and I didn't leave. So if you would have left, all I can tell you is you weren't as desperate as I was. You didn't drink as much as I drank because nobody was going to chase me out of here. You know, when they could talk about God, I was going to stay here because I knew this was my only hope because I had no... Cause, let me tell you something. If getting your feelings hurt chase you out of here, you really need to drink some more. But, hey, listen, I'm going to tell you something. You're not going to drink because I just said that. Because I'm telling you, if you're getting your feelings hurt means you're going to drink, I promise you, if you hang around here, you will get your feelings hurt. If you can think you can live a life of rip, raping, and robbing and being self-centered out there because you're crazy thinking, and then you come into a group where there's actually some people getting well and not hear something that's going to piss you off, you're fooling yourself. And if you're hanging around people telling you stuff about you that's always making you feel good, you better find somebody else to hang around. Because you ain't getting the right information. Because the truth will set you free, but it ain't going to piss you off first. You know what I mean? You know what they said with the Tom Cruise movie? A Few Good Men? The truth, you can't handle the truth. You can't handle the truth. We're the guys that get eaten by the big fish in order to get to... That's how we get to the truth, the fish. You know? So what, I got another hour? It's cool, isn't it? Let me tell you something. You know, in the good old days, we'd go on for 3 hours like this. And then when we broke up the meeting, you'd have to turn off the lights to get the people out. You know, I go to a meeting on Friday nights. This is true. I go to a meeting on Friday. Because you know what? Because they were interested in God and they were thirsty and they wanted this deal. And there are people in this group that say, go on for another 3 hours. And the people in this group say, I can't believe this. It's almost 1 o'clock, 2 o'clock. And I go to a meeting on Friday night and we got about 30, 40 people. You know what? And we sit around, and it's not in the book, it's not any of your books, it's not in the where and when. I go to a bunch of meetings like this, and we talk until the last person finishes talking. And you don't have to go to that group. And the only people that know about it, hear about it by word of mouth. And you know something, you can leave if you want to leave. And nobody leaves. Maybe one person leaves, he has to be somewhere. And they'll last 2 hours, it starts at 7 o'clock, it'll end at 9:30, 10, when the last person finishes talking. And you want to, and nobody leaves because they want to hear how God is working in people's lives. And there's only one rule. No complaining. We don't want to hear the bullshit. We want to hear the solution. Oh, well, no, you can complain, but you complain at your own risk. If you don't have a sponsor to complain to or somebody else to complain to before you get there and you want to use us as your sponsor, you can get a complaint, but it ain't going to be pretty. Because we do have crosstalk. You know, and somebody will tell you something that's going to piss you off. And you know, when the meeting ends after 2.5 hours, guess what? I got to flick the lights. 20 minutes, they sit around there talking because they don't want to leave because they're so excited. Because they don't want to leave because they're just filled with the Spirit. And you know, I'll go to an AA meeting like this and I'll be talking and there'll be people that are excited and there'll be other people saying, they're shaking their head, they're looking at their clock because we got the homogenized, pasteurized, you know, clean as a whistle, higher power. Don't say anything that's going to get anybody upset. Don't dig too deeply. You might chase somebody out the door. Politically correct Alcoholics Anonymous going on. And the great thing is people get sober anyway. They really do. And I'm not putting it down. It's wonderful. I love Alcoholics Anonymous. But I'm just giving you a glimpse. All I'm doing, hey, listen, you know, my job in here, you don't have to believe what I do. This is just my opinion. I'm just telling you, I'm supposed to tell you my experience. You know what the big book says? It says on page 29, and I'm going to close with this. You may think that this is about a drunkalogue. And when I came up, all I could talk about was a drunkalogue at first. But this is what it says. It says on page 29, further clear-cut directions are given showing how we recovered. These are followed by 43 personal experiences. Each individual, in the personal stories, describes in his own language and from his own point of view the way he established his relationship with God. If you hear somebody talking about, and then I drank, 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 and somehow, some way, he doesn't get to the point as to how he established his relationship with God, he ain't talking AA, he's talking the same crap they were talking about in the bars, because I saw that line in the bar. And it may be entertaining. It may be AA entertainment. You may laugh at that. And I suppose we need that in order for us to somehow have an identification, say, hey, that guy's just like me. But the bottom line is what this program is about, it's about the solution from that stuff.
Yes.
You know, laughing about some of our antics and laughing at ourselves and learning to laughing at ourselves and identifying is important. But the ultimate deal, the thing that's going to keep us away from the booze, is that relationship you have with God. So that no matter what happens in your life this year, it may be good stuff. Hey, listen, I've gone through the cancer. I've gone through the people dying in my life that I love. You know, nobody's going to escape this life without going through hard times and tough crap happen. I've gone through it all. And, you know, as an alcoholic, I want to blame you. I want to blame the world. I want to feel sorry for myself. I want to use an excuse to drink or to drug or do something. And it's easy to do that because that's the nature of my disease. But if you have a relationship with God and you're looking at Him and you know He's going to give you everything you need, if you just trust Him, you know, and focused on Him, no matter what happens, no matter how much stuff you get in your life, if you're lucky to get stuff, you know something? It'll never mean that much to you. And if you lose everything you have, one by one, little by little, it won't even mean that much to you. Because you can never lose Him.
Yes.
Because you'll never lose, He will never, you know what Dr. Bob says? He says, your Heavenly Father will never let you down. And you'll be part of the other fellowship in AA. You won't be part of the thumb-sucking crybabies. You'll be part of the fellowship of the Spirit. You will surely meet some of us, you know, as we trudge this road in the fellowship of the Spirit. God bless you. Have a great new year. Good to be here.